Hey everyone, welcome to the third episode of Troublemakers, a podcast by Maker Mag. Before we get started, let me thank our amazing sponsor, Blockstack, who are making this podcast possible. Blockstack allows makers to build a new generation of apps that are private, secure, and where the users own their data. If you want to learn more and read stories of other makers using Blockstack, you can go to blockstack.org/makermag. That's blockstack.org/makermag. And now on to a nice chat, hopefully a nice chat, with our guest today, Josh Pickford, founder of Barometrics and many, many other projects. Hey, Josh, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So let's maybe start with a quick intro. You're known for working on lots of different projects at the same time. So what's your focus at the moment?
Sure. So I guess the short answer is, like, right now my main thing is I'm the CEO of a company called Barometrics, which does like revenue analytics for subscription companies. And then I've got half a dozen side projects in addition to that. So the side projects are like anything from like I'm working on like a music industry simulation game. And then I also have like a handmade home goods stuff where I make like concrete home decor, and I laser engrave tweets, and it's a really weird mix of stuff.
That's really cool. Half a dozen projects, that's a lot to manage. Yeah. Sounds like you have a range of both physical and digital projects.
Yep.
What would you say these two different types of projects bring you?
Sure. So I, like, today, as of today, like, I spend so much time on the, again, like Barometrics being CEO of that, that it's like, that's, you know, very much in the software space. So any kind of project outside of that, I try to do something that's not related to business software. And whenever I can make it an actual sort of analog thing, I do. So whenever, you know, like take the home decor stuff. So there's a digital element in that I have to design something in like 3D, you know, modeling software. But very quickly that, you know, translates into like creating molds out of silicone and like using concrete to, you know, actually make the things. And so, you know, whenever I can, I enjoy designing and creating products. And whenever I can design something that is this like thing that uses my hands, I prefer that just so that I'm not doing the same, you know, software play over and over again.
Awesome. I know some makers who like to bring the digital and physical world together in their projects. Like, you see this with Arduino, for example. What about you? Do you try to keep these separate?
I don't know that I intentionally do that. You know, I have like a workshop at my house where a lot of the physical good stuff happens. But I mean, you know, then I also have my office where the computer is and stuff like that. So it's, I don't know that I intentionally try to separate them. Some, you know, functionally they end up separate just because, you know, if you've got like you're doing woodworking, you won't want to do that like inside your house. So
cool, that makes sense. What about making money? Are you trying to turn these into businesses to generate profit, or maybe do you want to keep them more as relaxing things to do when you're not working on Barometrics?
Right. So for me they are side projects in that I'm not actively trying to have them, you know, support me financially. Now, that being said, a number of them do make money. But that's even that in of itself is also sort of some of the fun of those projects or having side projects is figuring out how to monetize them or how to make them like economically viable. Like the ideal scenario is that my hobbies pay for themselves. So, you know, if I can make a thing and then sell it and not have lost money on creating it, then fantastic. So, you know, but that being said, none of the side projects, I guess, like pay me. I don't take any sort of like payment from them as far as my like personal income goes. They all, I mean, you know, I think last year my home goods thing made like, I don't know, $10,000-$15,000 or something like that. But I didn't see any of that in my own personal bank account. Like I kept it all in the business bank account so that I could keep using it to, you know, create new things.
Awesome. I have to say, some of your projects seem a bit random. Like,
yeah,
the laser tweets one, it's really fun, and obviously lots of people are talking about it on Twitter, but like, did you wake up and feel like something like this had to exist?
Right.
What's your brainstorming process like?
Yeah. So in that case, it was, I bought a laser cutter and I needed to figure out how to pay for it. So those, they're not cheap. And I had some ideas when I bought it, just to really actually for the handmade home goods stuff. Like, there's some stuff with a laser cutter that would be really handy. And so I, like, that was like the obvious thing for me, but then it was like, okay, that's not, I don't sell the stuff that I'm cutting for that. So I thought, like, how can I make something that I could laser cut and then sell? And the tweet thing, so I'm trying to, in that particular case, it was people, like, I had, someone had gifted me actually a cross-stitched tweet from from back when Baremetrics launched. Like a year ago, somebody sent me a cross-stitched tweet from when I like tweeted about launching Baremetrics. And I was like, oh, that's a cool gift. And so that has like been sitting on my desk for a while. And so then I was like, oh, but I could laser etch some tweets. I mean, it was just one of these like totally random ideas. And I don't, to me, like, that's the benefit of having, I have all these random tools around, or like gadgets, from like laser cutters to CNC machines, 3D printers, like that kind of stuff, sitting around my office. And so it's like, it lets me have a totally obscure idea and then go try to make it. And so that's like one of the really big benefits of having these tools around, is like the obscure ideas that you have that may pop into your head and then like 2 seconds later you've forgotten about it already. I don't forget them. Like, I usually will stop what I'm doing and go try to make the thing that I just had an idea about. So that's what happened in the case of the laser tweets.
That's amazing. So if I understand correctly, these are made to order, right? Which means you need to get people's orders, then make their laser tweet, then ship it to them.
Yep.
Which all sounds like a lot of work. So how do you go about managing these side projects alongside your main gig, which is Baremetrics?
Anything not Baremetrics related, it's not really consistent in that, you know, every single day I'm having to set aside time to laser etch some tweets. But I mean, it's at least a few days a week. So what I usually try to do is block out time specifically. So on my calendar. So I'll say, you know, from 8 to 12, I'm going to be all in on Baremetrics. I've got to write an article or, you know, do like a podcast like this or something like that. But, you know, and then maybe from like 1 to 3, I'll, you know, set aside time to work on laser tweet stuff, or it depends. Like, it changes week to week, but, sort of explicitly blocking out time is the way that I sort of manage making sure that every project gets some time put towards it. You know, but past, as far as figuring out what to work on, I mean, I don't have a great system in place. Some of it's just what I want to work on at a given time. You know, which, yeah, that a lot of it's just like what I feel like working on. So that's a perk. I mean, like, that's a nice thing to be able to just pick what I work on.
Sounds like lots of these are about you enjoying the process, which is awesome.
Yep.
But I was having a look at that great spreadsheet that you put together.
Right.
And it's a spreadsheet of all of the projects you've worked on over the years. All of the failed projects too. Super transparent. But compared to the stuff we just talked about, there's lots of boring stuff in there, like Amazon affiliate sites. And maybe it's just me, but I don't really imagine these being fun to work on.
Right. No, not at all. So I mean, a lot of it's, I guess, you know, year in the past, so pre Baremetrics, a lot of this, the business ideas that I had revolved around, were software based stuff. And so, and the motivation for them was specifically like trying to figure out a way to make some money. And so like what I've found is, if my motivation is purely financial, then it's I'll lose interest pretty quickly. So, you know, in the case of like the Amazon affiliate stuff, which was like 2004, I think was when most of that stuff was. And it's like, none of that stuff made any money. And like, I didn't have any interest in the affiliate world. So very quickly, I like just shut that stuff down. But you know, now it's like, I choose to work on things that, you know, I have an actual interest in, and then the side benefit of being able to make some money from it is just like the cherry on top, you know? But that, which is that, like, that's the case now. It's like Baremetrics makes all of my income. And so, anything else outside of that is really just for kicks. But I'll choose to shut something down, like, if I'm not having fun anymore. You know, which is like with like the home decor stuff, you know, people have asked like, well, could you outsource, have somebody else like make the things for you or whatever, and then you just sell them? It's like, well, I could, but like the fun part is me making them, you know, like I don't want to over optimize it because I enjoy the process. So, so, you know, I certainly could scale a lot of this stuff, but it's, then it like takes away the part that's actually enjoyable for me.
Cool. That's a great way to know when to stop pursuing a business idea. But what about recognizing those ideas that have potential? When did you know, for example, for Baremetrics, when did you know that it was worth it to keep working on it?
So a few months in, it was, so I built Baremetrics as really initially as this internal tool for two other SaaS products that I had. And initially I had not even planned on like releasing it. I just needed the tool. So when Baremetrics passed, well, I decided like on a whim really to like start sell it, like making it so that other people could pay for it. And shortly after I launched it, it had surpassed what the other products were making on the income side. So I knew then that like the tool that was supposed to be this internal tool, when it was making more than the businesses that it was made for, I realized like, okay, this is a thing that I should probably go all in on. So that's what I did.
That's great. And in your case, being all in meant hiring people. And as you know, lots of people decide to fly solo these days, to stay solo founders, working on their own, some of them to preserve their freedom. So what about you? When did you decide it was time to grow the team at Baremetrics?
So I figured out pretty early on with Baremetrics that I did not have the skill set to like really keep growing it, especially on the engineering side. So I had, you know, hacked together a solid first version and scaled it to a few thousand dollars a month, and then like started hitting all these sort of technical roadblocks that I mean, in theory I could have figured out how to solve them, I guess. But also, like, for me, coding isn't a thing that I enjoy just for like coding's sake. It's a tool. It's like a hammer. And so I didn't enjoy like trying to figure out how to scale the actual software side to like support, you know, hundreds of businesses or whatever. And so I hire, it's just like this, in the same way that I don't enjoy bookkeeping, and so I hire a bookkeeper. I didn't enjoy the engineering side after a certain point. So I would hire somebody to take care of that for me.
What about management then? Do you enjoy managing people?
I like having a team. So I don't necessarily enjoy all of that comes with the sort of HR, whether that's like the hiring process, and, you know, having to deal with like benefits and just sort of the administrative stuff. But I like working with other people. So, you know, I very quickly figured out that having a team of people who are, you know, sort of experts in their field working on a thing is fun. It's a ton of fun. So yeah, I like working with other people, and like, yes, it takes away some of the sort of freedom, I guess, that comes with being 100% solo. But at the same time, you know, I have a hard time, even people who say that they're like completely solo, most of the time, like, they have outsourced some aspect of it. Like, most people don't do 100% of every single thing. And all the, like, the hiring part is just sort of outsourcing that on a little bit larger scale. But, you know, it to me, it doesn't stress me out, I guess, at this point. It did early on, but at this point, it's like, you know, it is what it is. And it's like, that's part of like building a thing.
Thanks. You know, I really appreciate you being so transparent. You being on this podcast and the way you share your stories very openly on Twitter, the way you manage your company. I guess this is kind of a segue to ask you about the Open Startups Movement, which has been started by a handful of companies, including Buffer. And yeah, I guess, what do you think of the Open Startups Movement?
Yeah, so back in early Barometrics days, this is 2013, 2014, there was just starting to be this sort of rumbling of like, you know, Buffer had started sharing a lot of their, you know, especially the numbers around things. And then there was like a support company called Groove, which was sharing, they're blogging a ton. So doing a lot of content plus like sharing, I think at the time there was like their journey to like $100,000 a month or something like that. And I found that stuff really helpful for me at the time. And so when I launched Barometrics, you know, it was like, there's two sides of it. So there was me. So initially it was like a source of just like, I was lazy and I needed to have a way to show a demo of our, of the dashboard that we offered. And so it was like, well, I could just make my own stuff public. And that is an easy way to have a demo. But then past that, it was like, I guess there was a little bit of sort of altruistic wanting to show other people what it was like. Because it's hard to find stuff where people are sharing like when things aren't great. Like it's easy to find people talking about all the things that worked. But it's a lot harder to find sources of data around when things aren't working. So I wanted to share that whole thing. And so, you know, I guess to me, it's really helpful to have all of that stuff available. Like, you know, some months that's great. Other months, it's not fun being like a sort of this public thing that people can read about and see, you know, when things are or are not working. But to me, the pros far outweigh the cons as far as showing what it's actually like and the fact that like most companies aren't really doing that well.
So do you think that being an open startup can only work for bootstrapped companies? Like a big part of being a funded startup is the stories you're telling the public and investors to keep them happy and excited, you know, and making sure you can hit your next funding milestones. And having your numbers out in the open makes it a bit harder to tell those stories.
Not so much. I think that it's, I think that it probably doesn't work as well. I think it's not that it's for bootstrap. It's just more that it's not for companies who are having to constantly sell their next round to VCs, because that is a lot of that is about like selling not what's currently going on, but like how things could be. And being open means that you're like laying out all your cards for everybody to see. And so it's much harder to, you know, to sell that. I mean, that being said, like if things are going amazingly well, then being open can be really beneficial, because then it makes VCs like want to jump on the bandwagon of all this growth. But in reality, most companies don't have a ton of really great growth. And so being open about that would probably not work out well for them.
Oh, you actually launched a product in that space. The goal was to connect investors with startup founders.
Yep.
And people were super excited about it. But then you shut it down pretty quickly. So can you share a little bit about that product?
Yeah, so we launched this product called Intros, where, you know, a startup could basically opt in to list their data anonymously in this directory of companies, and then VCs would sign up to get access to the directory of anonymized companies, and they could filter and say, you know, like I only want to see companies who have a growth rate of 5% month over month and are doing at least $10,000 a month in revenue and have 100 plus customers, whatever. So they could filter all that, and then if they saw a company that sort of met some of their investment criteria, at least on the numbers side, then they could request an intro. Then the company could approve or deny that intro to share more data. So that was the idea, because I mean, since Barometrics launched in 2013, on a usually weekly basis, I'm getting asked from both sides, you know, either somebody looking for a VC to talk to or VCs looking for companies to invest in. So this was just like a marketplace to connect the two without me having to play middleman. So launched based on that sort of thesis that the data would be really valuable to investors, and companies could get in front of investors pretty easily. Functionally, that turned out to not really work. So VCs, turns out, actually, while they like to spend lots of money on companies or like put lots of money into companies, they don't actually have that much money to spend on anything. So so they aren't really interested in spending, say, $500 a month or even $200 a month for this tool, even if it optimizes their workflow. Like, a lot of VCs operate in this space of, you know, I've always done a certain thing a certain way, and so I'm not going to change my process. Or they feel like their process is like something special that they've figured out how to find companies, and it's like their magic sauce that can't be replicated. When in reality, you know, if you use a really like heavy database approach, you could probably outperform any VC's little special sauce thing over and over again. But, you know, they won't admit that. So that's where it like kind of came down to, you know, hey, this, we're not going to be able to sell to investors here. It's an uphill battle. And in reality, I don't care about the space, right? Like, I'm not an investor. I don't do any investing, and we don't really sell a product for investors. So it was just a totally new market for us, and not a market that we were interested in going all in on to try to like force it to work, just because we had built some software for it.
Interesting. You mentioned VCs thinking they found the magic sauce. What about you? Do you feel like you found your own secret sauce with Barometrics?
I mean, I don't know that I've like found anything like some sort of magic thing like that has worked really well. I think in part it's just sort of, I stumbled on the idea. You know, it was like, you can connect all, like pretty much everything I've worked on has been sort of the stepping stone to something else. And it just happened to be that Barometrics was a stepping stone that like happened to work out really well. And that's not to say that I think some of the previous ideas that I shut down could have worked. But, you know, and maybe that was the difference, was that like Barometrics by that point, I'd done so many different, I learned so much from all the previous stuff that I knew what to sort of go all in on or what to focus on to make it work. Whereas like something previously that could have worked well, but I just didn't have the knowledge to make it work well. You know, in if I could go back, I probably could have made some of those previous projects into much more successful things. But you know, I just didn't have the resources or the knowledge at the time. So I think like that's a lot of projects. So the purpose of stuff that you're working on isn't necessarily to make it turn into a big thing. It could just be to teach yourself something new, right? Like I had this online community for pug owners called PugSpot. And I taught myself how to program like Ruby with that. And, you know, I could have potentially turned that into like some big like social network for dog owners or something like that. But the big takeaway for that was not how much money I did or didn't make from it, is that I taught myself this like new programming language, which like ultimately, like that's what I built Barometrics in. And like it allowed me to functionally do these other things. And so even though something may not be like this direct financial success, it was certainly this sort of educational success that allowed me to do other things down the road.
That's actually a great way to look at side projects, and maybe explains why you have so many of them.
Yep. Oh, that's so much of that is like me. I'll start something because I want to learn how to do it. You know, it's like the like music simulation game thing. Like that's like me having this interest in like game theory and like all the stuff that goes into the economics of a game, and like how to make all these like financial systems work, and how you like come up with all these different algorithms for deciding when something should or shouldn't happen in a game. Like all of that stuff's really interesting to me. So it's like, okay, well, let me build a game to like learn how to do it, you know?
That's super interesting. Well, that's the end of our podcast. We promised our listeners to keep it short and sweet. So if you want to read more, you can follow Josh on Twitter. His full name is Josh Pickford. Thanks so much, Josh, for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a ton of fun.